Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the weekly show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everyone with us. I have an opening question as we head into a brand new week. Have a new question. A big question, by the way. So what is more ominous in your mind as you sit pondering the future of civilization or just making it through the next week? What strikes you as more ominous? Russia has test launched a nuclear capable missile from a submarine. Okay, that's number one. Number two, Trump is outpolling Biden in 5 swing states. Which is a more immediate threat to our liberty and our physical autonomy, to our rights? And yeah, I know, because Trump's ahead in the polls, anything could happen. At any, the aliens could land, lockdown, anything could happen. So I'm much more concerned about the polling data, because I mean, you remember what happened when Trump beat the impeachment, right? Yeah, COVID. Yeah, and then and right after that, the demented, criminally insane sex cult seized the executive branch of the government in the United States. And so anyway, that's a little, it's worrisome, that's all. But hopefully we'll make it through. Well, we will make it through one way or another. It's just, you know, which way. So let's go to Georgia, where we have a report from a restaurant, which we will not, well, we will name the restaurant, Toccoa Riverside Restaurant. That is in Georgia. It may be in Toccoa, Georgia. We don't know where it is. But there's a restaurant, and a couple went to the restaurant where they had a meal, and they brought their kids along. They had a meal, and at the end of the meal, the restaurant cited them with a $50 surcharge for their children's loud, annoying, disruptive behavior. And it was right there on the bill. It was a line item on the check. Your awful children, $50. Well, the hapless couple, because no one has any shame anymore, they posted it on social media looking for sympathy. And they found it because, yeah, this is just where we are. So, Toccoa Riverside Restaurant's in Georgia, so we'll never go there. We vowed never to cross the Mississippi ever again.
No.
Well, if at all possible. Forget the Mississippi. Anyway, where was I? I was in Georgia. Now the controversy is absolutely viral, because thousands, according to this report from Breitbart, thousands of commentators on Reddit were stunned that the restaurant would be so mean to these parents whose children are rotten little, horrible little animals. Anyway, so who cares that a million idiots on Reddit are outraged? Thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions. I don't care if there's a billion people outraged. What does that matter? Everyone acts as if a Twitter storm or a social media outrage is like a thing. It's just an illusion. It's a bunch of relatively shallow, stupid people expressing their eternal moral outrage over something that holds their attention for just a moment. And these type of outrages, they actually drive culture, and they actually affect the decision-making of serious people with serious influence and serious things that are happening. Serious people act as if a social media outrage explosion means something, and it doesn't mean anything. It's meaningless. It's just a moment. Poof. It erupts for a moment, and then it's gone. It's like when all the psycho perverts over at NATO, remember when they all declared that Russia can't be given a single inch? They must be stopped. The demented madmen. Or it's the end of everything we know is democracy and freedom and all the values we hold dear will end. Wait, what's that? Wait a minute. What's that over there? That looks interesting. What's happening over here? Excuse me? Ukraine? What about Ukraine? Ukraine. Yeah, Ukraine. Yeah. What about our eternal love for her democracy and stopping the madman before he conquers the world? Well, Ukraine now have to, they'll just have to take care of themselves. We've seen something shiny over here. All right. So anyway, kudos to Toccoa Riverside Restaurant for slapping a $50 fine on parents who, I mean, something's got to get their attention and let them know they're doing a horrible job of raising their kids. I hardly ever see people out with their kids anymore. I've noticed that, you know. I think people just gave up taking their kids to restaurants. I don't know what they do with them. Maybe they're chaining them in the basement. I don't know. But you don't see too many large groups of, you don't see too many moms and dads with, oh, that's it. They give them to the grandparents. Yeah. Or they just don't have kids and they leave the dogs at home. That could very well be. That's right. They take the dogs. They'll take the dog. That's right. You have to step around the dog in order to get to your table. We're not even going to go there. Don't get me started with all that. Wait a minute. Did I have another note on here that I thought was interesting? Who cares what a million idiots say on Reddit? No, that was about it for that. So now we go to the Yes We Can file. Si se puede. Uh-huh. That's right, where the Biden White House issued a statement this past week urging schools to stock up on Narcan. Yeah, uh-huh. That's the Joe Biden, who's the president of the United States, and the education secretary, whatever that is, they urge schools, and in fact, everyone, to keep Narcan on hand and to train teachers how to use it. That's right. In case someone is either overdosing or being poisoned by fentanyl. Now, the difference is overdosing is when you took the fentanyl on purpose. And being poisoned by fentanyl is when you accidentally got some fentanyl that you thought was a different drug. The thing is both kill you just as dead. And so the president has a plan. In the midst of this fentanyl overdose epidemic and poisoning, by the way, don't leave the poisoning out. A lot of times he thought he was just taking oxycodone. I mean, he thought he was just taking some, for crying out loud, he was a good kid. In the midst of this, it's important, says the president of the United States, to focus on measures to prevent youth drug use and ensure that every school has Narcan, which they call naloxone here, because I don't know why they do that, the urinalists. It's why can't you just call it Narcan through the whole story? Because there's no point. It doesn't matter that you, does it make you, do you think it makes you look smart that you know the clinical name? We don't care about that. We just want to know the story. What we want to know is, why is the president of the United States focusing on drug overdoses in the schools? But they don't even address that. They just give the story here, and they're just telling us what the president's up to. He's trying to prevent the fentanyl overdoses and poisonings, by the way, in the schools. Studies show, say the urinalists at town hall, that Narcan access can reduce overdose death rates. It can reduce death rates. And Its availability does not lead to increases in drug use. Just because everyone knows that the teacher has a get-out-of-jail-free card in her desk doesn't mean that Johnny will sniff more or less fentanyl in the back of the class. It has no effect. Studies say. And by the way, just in case you were wondering, Narcan causes no harm if used on a person who is not overdosing on opioids. How do we know that? Well, based on the relatively short period that Narcan's been around, we're just assuming it doesn't hurt anyone. You know, like with the COVID shots. They're totally safe and effective too. Narcan, you could sniff it all day. Probably good for you. Grow hair on your chest, kiddo. Oh, yeah. Oh, and by the way, just in case you're concerned, I'm reading from the president's statement, by the way. I mean, except what I'm making up. But most of this I'm reading, it's a serious statement from the president of the United States. He puts in his statement, individuals, says Joe Biden, individuals should not be afraid to administer Narcan, as most states, most, have good Samaritan laws protecting bystanders who aid at the scene of an overdose. Meaning, if you administer Narcan to someone by mistake and it turns out they were overdosing on methamphetamine, and then they try to sue you because the naloxone Narcan didn't hurt them, but they were psychologically harmed by you assuming they had overdosed on a drug that they weren't overdosing on. It turns out they were just overdosing on another drug, or they were just really drunk and had passed out. And you go shoving Narcan up their nose. Now everyone thinks I'm a junkie. I'm taking you to court. Well, there are good Samaritan laws to protect you. So don't be afraid to shove that Narcan nozzle up every nose you can. If anyone even looks a little sleepy, jam that thing up there. Yeah, the teacher will show you how. They're all trained professionals. The president then closes his statement with, our schools are on the front lines of this epidemic, but, says Joe Biden, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't matter what he says after that. Our schools are on the front lines of an opium overdose epidemic. What are we living in China 500 years ago, for crying out loud? This is bizarre. Are we living in a pagan kingdom on the verge of collapse because of the opium wars? And what's going on in America? Why are our public school children on the front lines of a drug overdose epidemic? That's a bigger question, but nobody asks that. Nobody asks that question because very few people are aware that it's a problem. Isn't that the way things are? I mean, kids go to school and, you know, kids at school do drugs and sometimes they overdose. And sometimes it's my kid. Sometimes it's your kid. That's the way it goes. That's the way school is, says pretty much everyone. I mean, except here at the Weekly Worldview, we just want to call attention to the fact that this is unacceptable. That our children are put on the front lines of an overdose epidemic every day. And then they're not even taught how to read or write or think or contemplate. Or, in fact, they are lied to about where they came from and where they're going and who they are. And then half the teachers want to molest them. And then, of course, there's the chance they could overdose, drop dead. And so maybe I should put that as reason number 2042, I believe, to get or keep your children out of the government schools because there's a overdose epidemic going on. Not to mention the fact that your kid might trip and fall and a teacher's jamming Narcan up their nose. Before you know it, your kid's got a deviated septum because some overzealous teacher jamming the Narcan up his nose, thinking he's overdosing, for crying out loud. Let that be a lesson to you. If your kids don't go to the government schools, don't send them there. If you haven't had children, have some. They're more interesting than dogs, trust me, and I like dogs. Dogs are fine. But have some kids and don't send them to the government schools. And if you are sending your children to the government schools, for crying out loud, what is your problem? What do you need? A Twitter storm? A social media outrage? Get the kids out!
Weekly Worldview.
And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you. Welcome back. It's good to be back. Now, we turn from the government schools to Farmageddon. That's right. Farmageddon is at hand. This is from the drug-induced stupor file, where we are being warned that Farmageddon is upon us because pharmacists are about to walk out. That's right. Pharmacists across the pharmacia industry say that they're trying to deal with unbearable workloads. And the pharmacists are organizing protests, and they're threatening to walk out, which is freaking people out. Because why? Because everyone's on drugs. And then now not everyone's on psychotropic drugs. Now, almost everyone, but there's a lot of old people who just need medicine to live, and there's sick people who need medicine. But the thing is if you're a pharmacist, and if you were just giving out medicine for sick people, it would be a fairly tolerable job. I mean, you'd have to work hard. Some days would be harder than others. But with what the pharmacists are trying to keep up with now, for crying out loud, you've got the amphetamines, the ADHD medicine for the children. Then you've got the antidepressants for all their parents. And then the other psychotropics for the divorce lawyers and the other parents. And then you got to get the COVID shots because I got the Pfizer stock. Come on. It just never stops. The pressure's on, man. Pharmacist Lanny Huang is organizing the protests. So you know it's bad when even the Asians are freaking out and saying this is too hard. You know? I mean... That's pretty ominous. That's right. And so Lanny Huang is organizing the pharmacists to walk out in what is being called Farmageddon. There's a pharmacist shortage. Why? Who can keep up with this level of drug dealing? That's what it is. Quotas. Let's see here. We've got Lanny says quotas requiring pharmacists to fill a certain number of prescriptions or administer large numbers of vaccinations are destroying our relationships with our patients. Supervisors make unreasonable demands. All right. Well, so here's the thing. If you're working for someone else and you have a supervisor, the nature of work is that supervisors will make unreasonable demands. That's why they have to pay you to show up. Otherwise, you wouldn't even go. You wouldn't even go near the building if they didn't pay you. I can feel for these poor pharmacists. I remember during the COVID hysteria and panic, I remember going to the counter there at the pharmacy there for some non-psychotropic, non-ADHD, non-COVID medications. I forget what I was getting. I had to get some medications that weren't related to any of that. So I think it was antibiotics. I had an old-fashioned, you know, I got an infection. I'm trying to get over it. All right. Anyway, but the pharmacist, this particular pharmacist, he had a mask fetish in that he had his mask on, N95. He's behind a plastic piece of plastic there, the bubble, right, with the plexiglass. He still freaked out that I didn't have a mask on. Threw me out of the store. So anyway, I still see him. I still see him every once in a while. We glance at each other, and I wonder, does he recognize me? I mean, even though he had a mask on, I remember who he is. Does he remember? He doesn't. He acts like he doesn't recognize me. Maybe he's forgotten who I am. Anyway, back to the pharmacist, these poor guys. All these unreasonable. They can't keep up with the drugs. Anyway, the cartels, all the lieutenants in the cartels, not the big guys, but the lieutenants. Running, you know, who do the hard work, the heavy lifting of the cartels. They have to actually shoot people and actually carry the big 15-kilo bundles of drugs. The lieutenants who do all the hard work and the soldiers, they look north and they realize that they're a bunch of amateurs, right? What they really need to do is they need to get with it. They're just a bunch of legacy employees based on an old business model, right? Their bosses figured out years ago that the thing to do, it's much more lucrative to just buy politicians and start legalizing the drugs. but yet buy doctors and psychologists and sell drugs to all the parents legally for their kids. You don't have to hump through the desert with a big bundle on you. You're not stuffing things into the spare tire. We're at Walgreens, for crying out loud. Okay, but the cartel bosses in Washington and every capital city in Denver and Sacramento and Columbia, start naming state capital. All the cartel bosses in all of those capitals, what they didn't realize is that the poor pharmacists can't keep up. They feel like, talk about a drug mule. The poor pharmacist, he feels like you're working me like a rented mule, for crying out loud. They want a bigger cut of the action. Or I don't know. All right, so there, Farmageddon could be upon us. They might shut the drugstore. At which that might be the emergency. I hadn't thought of that. I hadn't put two and two together. So if you think COVID was bad, if Trump polls any higher, they're just going to close all the drugstores, and that's going to cause probably the greatest catastrophe since the Great Depression. Actually, the COVID was worse. So, in fact, if you're going to talk about the greatest catastrophe, you could only go back to COVID and the summer of 20. Remember the all of that? It'd be the worst thing since that, which was horrible. Okay, now we come off of the drug-induced stupor file, and we go to Sammy Bankman-Fried. Oddly enough, a jury has found. Listen to the folks at Rantingly. They call Sam Bankman-Fried a disgraced Democrat mega donor, which indeed he was. The Department of Justice indicted Sammy Bankman-Fried, alleging that he was running a scheme to divert and steal investors' money and fund campaign contributions. So he was funding campaign contributions among other less nefarious endeavors. That was the worst crime that he was accused of. The jury there reached their verdict after only 4 hours of deliberation. So here is what was sold as an extremely complex case of cryptocurrency and multiple accounts. And it's all this. The trial went on for weeks as the jury were given all the minutiae of this complex and sophisticated financial data. And the jury just looked at this guy and they were like, this drug addict maniac, of course he's guilty. Look at this creep. 4 hours. They're like, we don't need to see all the notes. No, you don't have to show us the balance sheets or any of that. Just throw this guy in jail. Get him out of here. Let's see here. The judge. Oh, he faces up to 100 years in prison, which we're told could be a life sentence. Now, can anyone imagine Sammy Bankman-Fried going to prison for the rest of his life for what he's done for the Democrat Party in raising tens of millions of dollars and funding their campaigns? And is it possible he goes to jail for that? Well, according to the article, a judge will make the final decision about how long Sammy Bankman-Fried spends in prison. And just to give you an idea how it's going to go, the sentencing for Sammy Bankman-Fried is scheduled for the end of March, which is 5 months from now. So we're not even going to get around to sentencing him until most of the people who are outraged about this have moved on to another outrage, so that we can quietly give him time served and move him back into mom and dad's basement up there in San Mateo or wherever it is up there in the Silicon Valley area, so that he can finish school Well, I'm assuming he quit school. Maybe not. Most of the most successful people in business, they quit school at some point. And no doubt he was very successful. He was a Sammy Bankman-Fried, a drug-addled child who thought he was running the show. He thought he was in charge until the world, his benefactors in the world, were done with him. And when he stumbled and there was a chance that he might get into trouble and he needed help, all of the powerful, evil people who found themselves in a potentially embarrassing situation related to Sam Bankman-Fried, when they saw he was stumbling, they kicked his legs out from underneath him. And then they stomped and ran over him as they headed for the exits. And actually, Sammy Bankman-Fried deserves pity from someone. Now, me particularly, I'm not capable of pitying him at this point. It probably means I'm not such a good person that I can't feel some human sadness and pity for and hope that Sam Bankman-Fried. So anyway, but God has mercy. God has mercy, and someone in Sammy's orbit, hopefully, will have enough pity on Sam to help him come to a knowledge of the truth. And me personally, he should be sentenced to death immediately, and he should be put to death within a few days. And I think that would be the most merciful thing that could. And if that were to happen, I would be happy to be the one to go into his prison cell and tell him the truth about what's about to happen to him. He's about to fall into the hands of the living God. And it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God, Sam. Trust me. If you think that judge was mean to you when he revoked your bail, oh, you just wait. All right, from there, we go from Sammy Bankman-Fried, we go to the Taliban. In the war file, the United Nations currently sends cash to Afghanistan about every 2 weeks. It's like they're a regular employee. They get a paycheck. Every 10 to 14 days, they receive approximately $80 million. $80 million every 2 weeks. It's like a salary for the Taliban. Now, this is all according to the latest report from the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction. He's special, and he's inspecting Afghanistan's reconstruction under the Taliban. Now, I know you all remember that we abandoned Afghanistan and we ran away, having lost the war. And then you would think that our responsibility for the reconstruction would be over and that it would be on the Taliban now since they took over and they won the war and all that. But because we're the United States and we're run by a bunch of drug-addled sex pervert maniacs, criminals, they're still pumping money into Afghanistan to rebuild it, even though we lost and we abandoned it. And we left, I don't know how many billions of dollars worth of guns and bullets and... But Joe Biden alone has allocated over $2.5 billion. Of course, it's all for humanitarian projects and the reconstruction. And by the way, the $2.5 billion from Joe, Uncle Joe, that's just since he abandoned the country and lost the war in 2021. So, yeah, that's after the suffering, the defeat in the 20-year conflict. Now, if you're concerned, don't be concerned, because the State Department has provided assurances that this billions and billions and billions of dollars is not enriching the Taliban. There's no way that could happen. Our people are far too smart, and there are far too many safeguards in place so that we could never be taken advantage of or beaten by the Taliban. That's ridiculous to think that that could ever happen. The Taliban, they barely even know how to put on shoes. You think they're going to defeat us? Ha! You think they're going to trick us and take our money? Anyway, there was testimony from certain people on the ground that, the Taliban are arresting aid workers. They're demanding sensitive data about various projects. And then once that data is turned over to the Taliban, there's allegations that the Taliban is creating fraudulent non-governmental charitable organizations and then infiltrating others and diverting some of that money to their own nefarious bad ends. Those are just allegations. But these backwards, ignorant, I mean, these people, they don't even ride camels, for crying out loud. You think they're going to... We're the greatest nation in the history of the military, of the history of the world, the universe even. It's a bunch of backwards sheep herders. Now, according to special investigator, the terror group Taliban, they remain firmly in control of the country, and they are continuing to implement what they consider their Islamic system. Why do they consider it that? Because that's what it is. And that's what they, that's what they're doing, and the money continues to flow. I mean, there's two things at work here. There's just bureaucratic inertia and incompetence in typical government work. Once the money started flowing, it just kept going because, I mean, it's in place, and it's a lot of work to stop all that, and bureaucracies and bureaucrats are generally fairly lazy. And then, of course, there's the cut that the executive bureaucrats get from the money that's going there. You know, there's the 10%. You think 10% for the big guy is a new idea? That's not a new idea at all. View, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. That's right. I just made the accusation that the people pumping money into Afghanistan are taking a skim in human beings, boys and girls. Yes, I did. I made that accusation. That's what the Taliban's into. And why would you keep giving money to the Taliban if you're not into the same creepy, evil, wicked, demonic thing? Yeah, it goes way beyond bureaucratic inertia and incompetence. So what happened in Afghanistan happened on purpose. All right. Meanwhile, speaking of on purpose, I pulled this story down on Saturday afternoon. Saturday afternoon, it was reported there were tens of thousands of pro-Hamas protesters in the streets of Washington, D.C. I said pro-Hamas. I know the headline says pro-Palestinian, but it's not pro-Palestinian. It's pro-Hamas. And then, of course, by Saturday evening, it turns out there were hundreds of thousands. Not tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. And they were marching, chanting, "We support freedom for Palestine," and they were coordinated by Antifa, BLM, Occupy, other open society vice presidents like Walter Smolarek, who I believe he's on LinkedIn. He's an open society vice president of sales, and he has been organizing and orchestrating. He and his fellow VPs orchestrate Antifa, BLM, Occupy, all of that. And the pro-Palestinian now is the latest. They march demanding an end to the massacre of civilians. With no irony at all. Yeah, in Gaza, that's. No massacre of civilians in Gaza. I mean, unless there's any Jews in Gaza, and then they probably look the other way, but just don't. All right, now, in fact, so that went on in Washington, D.C. Did you hear me? Hundreds of thousands of people marching down the street screaming Allahu Akbar, shaking the gates at the White House, having to be repelled by police at the White House to be kept off the White House grounds. That actually happened this past weekend. And meanwhile, in Britain... In Britain, there was hundreds of thousands of maniacs, Muslim, communist, Marxist maniacs were allowed to march, screaming about from the river to the sea, waving their Palestinian flags. And when a group of British veterans showed up, waving the Union Jack, the police put the veterans behind barricades and said, "You have to stay over here," while the Islamists march down the streets in London. And so there's video. One of the protesters asks, One of the protesters says to the police, when they march down the street with hundreds of Palestinian flags, you won't say a word. And the policeman actually says to this 75-year-old veteran, the policeman says with a straight face, there's way more of them than there are of us. That's what he actually said. I'll tell you what. So you've heard me talk about the big flinch. Well, in Britain, I mean, forget about it. And by the way, has anyone else noticed the similarity between the tranny flag and the Palestinian flag? They both have the triangle stabbing in from the left against some colors. I just noticed it, okay? And it's only because I noticed the similarities between Antifa and BLM and Occupy and from the river to the sea, to all the pro-Palestinian, all of that. I noticed the similarities, that's all. Now, who would have ever supposed? Had you walked out in the streets on September 12th, 2001, think back with me, September 12th, 2001, the day after 9/11, if you would have told people that within 20 years there will be hundreds of thousands of Islamic sympathizers marching on Washington, D.C., chanting Allahu Akbar, people would have thought you were crazy. I would have thought you were nuts. Well, little did we know, right? Little did we know that, I mean, we had already sold ourselves down the river. And who could have ever imagined that a bunch of backwards, inbred, mentally deficient, third world misfits who could barely feed and clothe themselves were going to conquer us? They were going to defeat us in war and then conquer our nations and take our nations away from us. Who would have ever thought? Well, it's happening right in front of our eyes right now. I am concerned that they are first going to conquer Israel. And they're going to do that just by simple geography. Israel happens to be there, and they happen to be surrounded by these people. And for 75 years, we've all commented on how miraculous it seems that this tiny little country can survive surrounded by enemies. Well, it has been fairly incredible that that has occurred. But my concern is that is going to come to an end fairly rapidly and catastrophically. And it's just odd. It's like when I woke up, I remember in 1989 when I woke up and the Berlin Wall was being torn down. And I thought, you know, everything that you think is so solid and permanent and this is the way things are, it can just poof in a moment, change and be over with and the opposite. And so anyway, it's just disturbing to think about that. And I hope you're disturbed. I'm disturbed about it. And you know what disturbs me as well, by the way? Speaking of things that you thought were solid and reliable and dependable, how about the Macy's Day Thanksgiving Parade? I never watched it. I always thought it was stupid. I'm not a fan of parades, first of all. I think it's kind of a dumb idea. But hey, you know what? It was a tradition, and it was all-American, and it was wholesome, right? A wholesome thing. I mean, there's worse. You're not out robbing banks. You're not out dealing drugs. You're watching the parade. It's a wholesome activity. Well, the family-friendly holiday tradition, Macy's Day Thanksgiving Parade, will this year feature performances from several Broadway shows. Broadway shows, you know what that means. That's right, a pile of queers and fags and perverts and deviants. And then this year, they will be joined by gender non-binary performers. Gender non-binary. Which is just a new marketing-friendly way to say creepy pervert weirdo sicko. Yeah, gender non-binary. That's someone who cannot manage their appetites and lusts to the point that they're a disgusting, foul, vulgar pervert. That's what gender non-binary means. It's like you're so out of control. So anyway, they're going to be in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And now, I hope you're sitting down, because it turns out this isn't the first time that they've had one of these deviants in the parade. I missed this, apparently, because I don't pay that much attention to the Macy's Day Thanksgiving Parade, because I think it's generally pretty dumb. But in 2021, a tranny pop star performed, making the 2021 Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade the first parade with a tranny. That was 2021. I haven't read a report on 2022 because it would just be depressing. I don't even want to know what happened in 2022. Anyway, in 2023, the queering of America continues with a transgender pervert, several perverts this year, who will be marching in the parade right down the street in front of God and everybody, as if that's okay. And I'm just here to say that's not okay. It's not okay with me, but it doesn't matter that it's not okay with me. It's not okay with God. And if you think that you can march this stuff right in front of God's face all the time and there's going to be no consequences, you are mistaken. You can't do that. You don't get away with that. I know it seems like you're getting away with it, right? Until the Taliban chops off your kids' hands. Right? You thought you got away with it, huh? Okay. Meanwhile, some good news. Reason number 2041 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. How is this a reason? I'll have to read the story and see what I was thinking when I wrote that. CBS 12 reports that homeschooling rates... Oh, here we go. Homeschooling has exploded in recent years, according to CBS. That's right. The country's fastest growing form of education. The number of homeschooled children in the U.S. has soared by more than 50% just in the past 5 years. Public school enrollment, meanwhile, has seen a 4% decrease, that would make sense, right? If homeschooling is soaring, you would expect there would have to be, by definition, a decrease in the government school enrollments. That's called math. And I know we don't teach that in the government schools, and I know that urinalists aren't required to, they're barely required to speak English anymore, or write English. But back to CBS's report on the explosion in homeschooling. Much of the growth occurred following the onset of the pandemic. You remember the onset of the pandemic. I remember the onset of the hysterical communist lockdowns. Is that what you were referring to? The hysterical communist lockdowns designed to install Joe Biden in office? And yes, not to put too fine a point on it, but yeah, I remember. I remember the communist hysterical lockdowns. Well, at that time, families, because of Zoom learning, families started to find out what their kids were learning in school, and they were shocked and astonished and horrified. And the sensible ones pulled their kids out. And it turns out there were a bunch of sensible parents who were astonished and shocked and horrified and got their kids out of the government schools. The Washington Post, by the way, carried out the research here. And they found that a majority of the 11,000 school districts that they evaluated still show elevated homeschooling rates. Elevated. And there's been an explosion. So the Washington Post, they, of course, use terms like exploded and elevated rates. Why? Well, of course, to convey their sincere concern for the American people. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us through that Washington Post research. That's enough to turn anyone off. cause anyone to change the channel. So from there, we go into the insurrection file. The insurrection, I said, where Breitbart reports that the United States Marine Corps had to make the tough decision to cancel this year's Marine Corps ball at Marsent in the Middle East due to uncertain security environment. It's uncertain. It's kind of scary. We're all hiding in our tents because it's scary and uncertain. Hoorah! Uh-huh. Yeah, the commander of Marine Corps Central Command says he wants to avoid a last-minute cancellation. He's already prepared to be scared and wet his pants. He's just going to go ahead and do it preemptively. Thank you very much. That's the commander of the Marines in the Middle East. That's to ensure the honor, to ensure we maintain the honor of the history of the traditions of the blah blah. They're gonna have a modified unit level celebration of the Marine Corps birthday where we will all cower under our cots and fill out paperwork to be reassigned to the Air Force, something like that. I'll tell you, we're a long way from Chesty Puller cutting the Marine Corps birthday cake in a combat zone in Korea in 1950. There's pictures of him, bullets flying overhead. It's actual fighting holes all around it as he's cutting the birthday cake, handing it to the youngest Marine, all of that. Thank you very much, William Jefferson Clinton, Barack Obama, George W. Bush, all of you. Thank you very much for destroying the United States Marine Corps. There will be a special, a portion of your torment in eternal damnation for doing that. Okay, so now, listen to this. Speaking of institutions, the United States Marine Corps being one, the 250th anniversary of the United States Marine Corps coming up in 2025. I believe it will be held in Kabul, Afghanistan, by the Taliban. There'll be no cake. There won't be any cake.
Hummus.
Yeah, hummus. It'll be hummus and pita. Speaking of all that, I wanted to go to... there's a historic Bur Oak. That's a tree. It's a Bur Oak tree. Located in Plano, Texas, the tree has been standing there for approximately 500 years. It's a 500-year oak tree, and it collapsed in flooding just this past week. And the city of Plano's Arborological Society says that it's a tragic loss. The head of the Arborological Society says, it's an old friend to me, this tree. If a tree could talk, the story would tell you about Indians gathering underneath it, traveling through the area, and it would tell stories about settlers and everything American. This tree has stood in a North Dallas suburb. Before there was a North Dallas, before there were suburbs, this Bur Oak tree stood, and now it was in pretty rough shape. They had tried to save it through a number of means and methods over the past few years. And so what had happened was that the tree looked bad on the outside, right? I mean, you could tell there were problems with the tree. They even tried bolting it together because it was splitting. But it turns out that it was the inside that was all totally rotted out, and the roots were drying up and dying and falling apart. And so even on the outside, it looked like there needed to be work done. It was on the inside that it rotted and became... it became weak to the point that just a simple weather collapsed it, which is sad. And we have a quote from the fellow over at the Arborological Services. He says, it's always sad when you feel like you did your best and it wasn't enough. And so I'm just going to leave it at that. I'll let that statement stand for what it is. Now, from there, we go over to China to meet with Gavin Newsom. That's right. We go to China to meet with Gavin Newsom. Why? Because that's where he was. Why was he there? Why was the governor of California and the Democrat nominee for the president of the United States, as soon as they figure out how to get rid of Joe Biden and kill off Kamala Harris? I mean that in a political sense. I certainly wouldn't want anything bad to happen to her physically. That would be terrible. That would be horrible. But, you know, they've got to figure that all out. But then, of course, Gavin Newsom, and I'm not predicting he'll be the nominee. I'm just saying that he's positioning himself. Should events occur and Barack Obama decide that he's the guy, you know, instead of Michelle being the guy, he could be the guy. He just wants to be ready. So he went over to China. Why? Because he was invited there. By who? Gavin Newsom was invited to China by the Chinese People's Association for a Friendship with a Foreign Country. The CFAFFC. We said, Gavin, please come. Give a speech. Talk to us. We'll take a picture with you. And he did. He went over there. And he met with the organization's CCP party secretary and chairman, Yang Wang Ming. And I'm not making that up. People think I'm racist and I'm making fun of him. No, his name is Yang Wang Ming. That's his name. Anyway, Newsom presented his trip as a week-long working trip intended to focus on climate action, and partnership between two of the world's largest economies. You see how he said that, right? Two of the world's, reminding people that California's economy is larger than almost every other nation on Earth. Almost every other nation. That was Gavin just dropping that in there, you know. It's one of the largest economies in the world. In October of, by the way, did I mention that he was invited by Yang Wang Ming of the Chinese People's Association for Friendship with a Foreign Country, who in 2020, the State Department designated that group as an affiliate of the Chinese intelligence services and warned that they were responsible for coordinating influence operations on behalf of the Chinese intelligence services, who brutally oppress and murder people all the time, every day. They brutally oppressed and murdered people today. They brutally oppressed and murdered some people while Gavin was there. Yeah. Oh, so that designation came when? October of 2020. Let's think back, go into the time machine. October of 2020, that was after the insurrection had started, right? By October of 2020... the nation was firmly in the grasp of the criminally insane sex cult that would seize power in November. You remember? So that this group was designated as a dangerous intelligence operation just before they took over. Ironically enough, which is just ironic that... got some good pictures of Gavin Newsom. His hair looked fabulous. And the sunglasses, I mean, really, wow. Right out of Central Casting. Well done. Meanwhile, now we want to go to the diabolical evil file for a speech from Barack Obama related to the ongoing hostilities against Israel, that's what's happening. It's hostilities against Israel that have erupted once again. And Barack Obama, and last week I talked about the fact that Gaza is the world's largest prison camp, and that we, America, and England and France and all of the powers in the world, we all bear responsibility for allowing this cancerous prison camp to exist for the past, I didn't realize it, some of these alleged refugee camps have been in place since 1948. Do the math on that. That's like 75 years. Generations of refugees in refugee camps. Well, we all do bear some responsibility for it. It's a shame. We should all be ashamed. The Americans, the English, all of us. Well, Barack Obama came out and gave a speech, and he said all of us are complicit. All of us. That's right. If there's, let's go to the tape, right? Go to the tape of Barack Obama where he gave a speech. I don't know where he gave the speech. He gave a speech at the Barack Obama Center, right? Because you're allowed to do that when you have no shame at all. And he addressed the hostilities against Israel. He said, if there's any chance of us being able to act constructively to do something, it will require an admission of complexity. So notice he said, if there's any chance of us being able. No, not for us, but of us. And then he said we would have to. There would have to be an admission of complexity. Not our admission, not my admission, but an admission. So I'm just setting the, okay. And he went on. He said, what Hamas did was horrific. There is no justification for it. And what is also true is that the occupation is unbearable. Ugh! Hold on, Barry. You said what Hamas did was horrific. There's no justification for it. And what is also true? Shouldn't you have said, but what is also true? Oh, but you didn't say but, did you? Even though a but should be there. Why is there an and there and not a but? Because Michelle Obama knows how to write a lawyerly statement. And she knows, oh, don't say but there. That would make it sound like you were saying but. Just say and the people are generally stupid enough that they'll just go along and listen, as if you haven't just equated Israel with Hamas. Even though Israel didn't chop up any babies or set anyone on fire, stick anyone into an oven or cut off anyone's hands or machine gun children in bathrooms, no one will realize that you just, because you're going to say, and what is also true is that the occupation is unbearable. And there was applause, of course, because they're all brain dead. And Barry went on, and what is also true is that there is a history of the Jewish people that may be dismissed unless your grandparents or your great-grandparents tell you stories about the madness of anti-Semitism. There's a history of the Jewish people that may be dismissed? About what? Wait a minute. Wait, did you just say there's a history of the Jewish people that may be dismissed? Because I don't really care what you said after that. Because what you really wanted to say was that. So it doesn't matter that you babbled on about someone's grandparents or great-grandparents and you mentioned the term anti-Semitism as if that's something only our grandparents talked about. There's a history of the Jewish people that may be dismissed is what I heard you say, Mr. President. And Barry continued in front of the Barack Obama World Forum for Economic and Freedom and Democracy, or whatever it's called, the Barack Obama Center. He went on, and what is true is that people right now are dying who have nothing to do with what Hamas did. And what is true, I mean, we can go on for a while, is you can't speak the truth. You can pretend to speak the truth. You can speak on one side of the truth, and in some cases, you can try to maintain your moral innocence, but that won't solve the problem. If you want to solve the problem, you have to take in the whole truth, admit nobody's hands are clean, that all of us are complicit to some degree. And of course, maybe there was applause after that. So at the end of that that meaningless word salad worthy of Kamala Harris, I mean, did you follow that at all? I mean, Kamala would have stood up and cheered and clapped and said, that's how it's done. But at the end of all that, that pile of meaningless words, he stumbles backwards into a half-truth. And this is how diabolically evil people work, is they always slip in a little bit of truth. Because we are all responsible for what has happened to the so-called Palestinian refugees. And I don't mean you and me as, I mean, we're not in the government. I wasn't able to do anything to liberate the camps and to basically whip the Arab world into shape and tell them, look, you have to let your cousins move into your countries. So, but I'm talking about America and Britain and NATO and all. We're all responsible. That's true. And then Barack Obama went on with the rest of his speech to talk about himself, which, of course, was always the main point of him talking was. So he goes on now for at least an equal amount of time and talks about himself and his presidency. So he and all the politicians in power for the past 75 years are guilty. They are. They all bear some responsibility. But Barry here is assigning all of us together corporate guilt. We're all guilty for what Hamas has done. That's the difference here. And there is a philosophical kernel of truth that we all bear some responsibility. But of course, Barry's solution is not repentance. It's not admitting we've done the wrong thing and asking God to help us figure out how to do the right thing. Barry's solution is submission to punishment by the West. Submission to punishment by the evil colonialist powers that made Barry Ho feel bad about being a black guy who didn't feel bad about being a black guy whose mama was white and all of that. So whatever twisted sickness is in Barry's sick, twisted, diabolically evil head, for whatever reason, he wants to get back at all of us about that. And that just goes back to his own difficulties and problems. And so now we're getting to the end there. We'll go to the show religion file, not the slow religion. Not the bad religion, not the good religion. This is the show religion where Kelly McEnany, who's a sock puppet over at Fox News, she went on a tour, I said, with the new Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. She gave him a tour of the Congressional Prayer Room. That's right. Wow. Who would have ever thought that the new Speaker of the House, who, by the way, is a staunchly Christian, he's a good Christian, strong Christian. Who would have ever thought that he would give Fox News a tour of the prayer room? Wow, that's original. Now, not only that, he told Kaylee McEnany, he told Kaylee, quote, we'll be using it every morning. This will be my discipline to come in here and seek the Lord's guidance for what we do each day. In fact, Fox News, Kaylee, you're invited to come every morning and broadcast our prayer here in the prayer room. Did I mention that this is the prayer room and that we will be praying here? Fox News can come in and every morning we'll be here. You can check on us. Every morning we'll be here. All right. Oh, and not only did Speaker Johnson, our strong Christian speaker, not only did he give Kaylee McEnany a tour of the prayer room and commit to using it every day. Wow. I mean, that's impressive. He also says he announced on Thursday that a decision on whether or not to hold a floor vote for the impeachment of Joe Biden will be made shortly. Yes. That's right. And by shortly, he didn't mean like by Friday because that didn't happen. So I would have taken shortly to mean like maybe the next 20 minutes. I mean, we got the check. We got pictures of the check. But Friday came and went. And shortly only means, well, we'll find out what it means. Now, remember, Mike Johnson was elected speaker unanimously. That means every Republican voted for him. So that means even the communists and the drug dealers and the child molesters in the Republican conference voted for him. So I'm just going to leave it at that, okay? I know what a great guy he is. He's probably the purest and straightest and most honorable guy who's ever cravenly clawed his way into political office. But I'll just leave it at that. Meanwhile, finally, from the Crossroads file, we check in with the Wiggles. The Wiggles is a group of, well, in the story, they're called a band. You remember the Wiggles, right? They're still around. I didn't know. Well, the Wiggles are upset that an Australian city is using their music in the city of Bunbury to drive away homeless people. That's right. They play Hot Potato at high enough volume that the homeless are all driven away. In the statement, the band said they're disappointed to see their music used in any other way than to bring happiness to children and families all over the world. And we just want to tell the Wiggles, hey, getting rid of the bums, clearing out the bums, that brings happiness and joy, especially to parents and children, especially in that neighborhood. So it's all good. All right. That's the Weekly Worldview. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.